Live from the Forbidden Book Group Studios in Doppeltown, USA, it's Necronomipod with your hosts, Mike Moncada and Mike Stoffel. Episode 4, Brian Lumley's Necroscope, a story about a man who can talk to the dead and the women who love him. And now, Necronomipod!
Colonel Rad Channel, this is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Welcome. This is the fourth episode of Necronomipod.
Forbidden Books Group.
We're the two mics. Hi, my name is Mike.
And I happen to be Mike as well.
That's two mics. And today we're talking about Brian Lumley's Necroscope, which is one of your favorite books, I didn't really care for it.
And I'm going to be setting down glasses a lot, so you'll hear lots of noises.
And then every once in a while, I'm going to fade out. Yeah, hang on to that. So Brian Lumley's Necroscope. Now, this is Brian Lumley. This is what I do know about Brian Lumley. Brian Lumley was kind of an underground writer for about, 10, 15 years. Coming and writing pretty much in the Lovecraft tradition, which we can't seem to get away from in this.
It's true, and actually on his webpage he talks about.
Oh, he's a huge fan.
And he wrote in that style.
He did write in that style. He has many books.
He wrote into the tales of Cthulhu Mythos.
Yeah, in fact, one of his first publications was a book in the published by Arkham House Books in the Sock City, Wisconsin, which is the publishing house that basically is responsible for people still remembering who Lovecraft is, and that's what they kind of do, is they do weird tales. And his first book was published there, and he did publish through the 70s lots of Lovecraftian books through Daw Books and various small publishers, but this book here, I remember when this book came out, I was in college. I remember seeing it up on the, because I was aware of.
Yeah, and it came out in 80, I wrote it down somewhere.
84. And the first, this edition that we read here.
I think I was in junior high then, so I don't think I've
been reading. Junior high. Yeah, no, he wasn't in junior high. I'm reasonably certain.
I was in junior high. Not Lumley. Lumley was already left the Naval Academy. He was the coolest of the military police. Of,
that's right. Well, Lumley.
In Germany.
Lumley has had a long career. He came to writing, not right away.
He came later in life.
Later in life to writing.
He dabbled in it as a teenager.
Yes, apparently. He did dabble in it. But he's kind of superstitious about his relationship to Lovecraft because he was born roughly 9 months after Lovecraft died.
Killed Lovecraft.
He totally killed Lovecraft. he considers that significant.
Do you think he thinks he's a reincarnation of Lovecraft?
A reincarnation of Lovecraft. This book was picked up by Tor Books, and it started this kind of horror dynasty. I mean, back in the 80s.
So Lumley himself was like the beginning of the horror dynasty.
I mean, the big best-selling horror, when horror actually became sort of a marketable genre, was with Stephen King in the early 70s, with Carrie and Dead Zone. And those kind of books. Before that, it was like weird fiction or fantasy. Dark fantasy. Fantasy is actually a new genre, but fantasy. They were like fantasy novels, but with monsters.
With blood and guts.
But mostly they were just called like weird fiction, like weird things, like supernatural fiction, stuff like that. But the horror genre. But this is his big breakout into the horror genre in the mid 80s, which was the big boom in horror. the big mass market horror section.
I was part of that boom.
You were. You started wrestling. You started reading. That's why I started reading these books. Mm-hmm. I read my first real horror novel. Probably was Salem's Lot.
Oh yeah, mine was Dracula, but I was fifth grade.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't read Dracula.
Yeah, that was quite a book to school. Try to tackle.
It was
as a fifth grader.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a weird. It's a weird book. It's a weird tale. That book.
It is a weird tale.
Very weird tale. But so this book was back then in the mid 80s, publishers were looking for, Stephen King could only write so fast. Dean Koontz could write faster.
And Stephen King went on, he wrote longer.
Yes.
I mean, Carrie was like, you could prop a table leg up with Carrie.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
It grew into these.
It's got bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah, I know. This is off the subject, but I think I was reading about how Carrie, that was his big breakout book.
Right.
The advance he got for that book was enough for him to, quit and become a writer full time instead of folding laundry.
It was his cash cow.
It was his cash cow. And he started publishing under his own name then. But, so in the mid 80s, they started looking for other, publishers started looking for other writers, and these writers out there publishing for small presses, which is what Lumley was publishing for, and science fiction publishers, and they this got put out and put into the big shelf with right next to right after the big K's and then before the big S, John Saul, and the big S's John Saul and Peter Straub, and it's still there. You go to any bookstore now, pretty much if it has a horror section worth anything, more than a single shelf, it'll have Brian Lumley in it. And this is the book that started it.
Except he isn't as well known.
He's not.
He really isn't. Because I remember you told me about him back in the early '80s when I was in junior high.
I remember when
I first read Lumley, and I think you told me about Lumley.
I probably did.
Or I had 90s. Been.
Yeah,
browsing a bookstore and just picked it up and told you about. But this was a long time ago, and you knew of him and you encouraged me to read Lumley, but
you jumped in. I had never read it myself.
You never.
But I mean, I have a shelf full of Lumley books, none of which I've read. This right here in front of me now is the very first Brian Lumley book I've ever read. I probably own, 15 of his books.
Own 15 of his books. You own the Necroscope?
No. I own the Titus Crowe books.
I was just going to ask you about this Titus Crowe because
you can ask me, but I haven't read
you
them.
You haven't read any of them.
I just own them. I was, this is when I was collecting.
And they do things. Allude to like his style was much more, that mannered style that we talked about.
Yeah, the whole school of arcane. Lovecraft school, using old timey words.
But he is not mannered in this book.
He is not. This is a big style change, apparently.
It's a C change, as they like to say.
It's a C change,
which I always thought was just the letter C, but apparently it's S-E-A,
A-C,
which I don't even know what that means.
It's what happens to something when you put it under the water. It changes. It kind of gathers minerals and barnacles.
Oh dear. Oh my.
It's rich and strange, that sea change.
A dark sea change.
Anyway, so this book, Theory, The Source, Dead Speak, and Dead Spawn.
Well, it's the vampire, there's Necroscope, and then there's the Vampire World series, and then there's the E-Branch, and there's the Psychomech trilogy.
Have you read all these?
No, I've only read all the Necroscope series.
The first five,
which quite frankly, I barely remember. And then I read the Vampire World series because they're so related. Mm-hmm. And then the next part of the Necroscope and the E-Branch shouldn't come out until
I
fell off the wagon. So
yeah, well,
and the five books are the Vampire, the Source,
Dead Spawn, Dead Speak, and Dead Spawn.
Dead Spawn, and then there's Blood Brothers, The Last Harry. Harry and Blood, something.
Speak.
Blood Speak. Blood Speak.
Yeah.
Don't blood speak.
Don't blood speak.
But I have to say, you know, I'm gonna run this book down because I don't know. I can't believe you are. We need to run a book down.
I think you're being snobby.
I'm being bitchy. I will admit.
Because of all the crap that you read.
I will admit that I'm going to be snobby on this.
All right, so here's where I'm going to have
to. But I'm gonna couch it with this. I plan to read the next book. And so that completely undermines my snobbiness.
It is. And there's a couple of things I have to say about that. One, you're a snob. Two.
Yes, I am.
And
you can't see this, but my nose.
And you have no right to be. And then two.
I really don't.
And you don't. And then two, here I have to admit to this. I love a story. So to hell with characters. Characters are fine, but I love a story.
Beneath the gross, almost amateurish errors in this book.
It's his first one of these.
But it's like his 15th novel. This is like his 15th
novel. No.
Oh, yeah.
But he was writing in a different style.
I know.
I'm not going to be an apologist for Lumsden. I can't be an apologist for him. I don't know enough about him, still going to defend him.
You know,
and the third thing I was going to say, part of me is like, I know what you're gonna talk about characters, but I don't care about characters.
There's one really good character in here, and you know that pulled me through.
And the third thing
was Dragasani, because we don't get back to it.
And the third, we'll get back to it. And the third thing was. This book really has to be seen as the preface to the rest of the series.
Yes, which is I want to read some more of them because.
And when you think about, because when you go into the second book, talk about love, the Lovecraftian, the way they describe that world that you're going to go. I believe that's the book you're going to go into.
Yes,
is when you really kind of figure out
theory.
When you really it's sort of like the backstory of vampires.
Yeah.
It is creepy, gory. The creatures are those. Just think of Lovecraft and his creatures, and that's what this.
That sounds great.
And the way buildings are constructed out of flesh, and it's living, and it is just.
Folks, this sounds tasty. Which is why I'm going to read. No, I've spoken to people who are, you know, not big fans of this, but
and there are apparently a lot.
There are quite a few fans.
As I started to go into the internet on this, it was like,
yeah. I mean, if you go on the internet and you look for
Germany and Poland have a website dedicated to Lovecraft.
Well, yeah. I mean, Lovecraft is a bigger deal basically in Europe.
Lovecraftian
things.
Okay.
Especially in Germany for some reason. I don't know why, but who knows?
Well, because.
Because of what? What are you going to say?
I don't know. Mike, I was just gonna say, have you ever gone to any like hookup sites from Germany?
No,
they are twisted people.
Awesome. Well, you know, there was that guy who hired the other guy to eat him,
and
that's Well, there you have it, folks. Real life horror. Anyway. So
let's talk about the book.
All right, let's talk about the book.
More into it. So the whole. I also want to say about this book was that, one, 85, we're still, the conceit is that we're at
war in the Cold War.
Yeah. Cold War with Russia.
Yeah. So although most of the story, the story has a span of years. It's probably a 15, 20 year span. So it's, you know, it's the whole.
Not really.
Because it ends in what, like 78, 79?
Right, because it starts off when he's a kid.
When he's a kid, and when Dragasani is a kid, and it's a flashback.
I couldn't help think about this book and also think about Harry Potter.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah,
because it's this whole coming of age and this person discovering their own blah 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 blah. You know the whole.
Yeah, but I do want to talk about this book, so let's do it.
So talk. All right, go ahead. Tell me what you didn't like about it.
So here's my grumpy part of this book.
Yeah.
We've been trying. You know, the other Mike here and I, we run into each other. Quite a bit between podcasts, you know, this is not strictly a business. And
I haven't gotten that check from your mother, by the way.
No, to be your friend. It's coming. We've been dropping hints, and coming into this podcast, I guess I've made it kind of clear that I was going to run this book down, and that Mike here has made it quite clear that he's going to sing his hosannas. So I'm going to run it down first, and then Mike here is going to defend it.
And then we're just going to
arm wrestle. And that will set.
Okay. What was your bitch about it?
My bitch about it was, well, I'm going to tell you some of the things I liked about it.
Okay.
I liked, at one point you said something about the fact that they were throwing in the kitchen sink, the baby, and the bathwater.
Yes, especially at the end.
Yes,
because... The end, the whole last
but I'm looking
150
at,
pages.
This train wreck of genres, because you have a almost Tom Clancy-style techno thriller.
Yes.
A Cold War techno thriller.
Yes.
You have a Lovecraftian supernatural... frankly, slow-paced Lovecraftian supernatural thriller.
Right.
You have
a coming-of-age story.
You have a coming-of-age story, which is completely botched. Completely botched.
Well, I don't know what you mean by that. But...
Oh, this. I mean, it's, you know, he's young, and then he's having the sex, and then he's old and mature, and tripping the Mobius fantastic.
He isn't that old when he's doing that.
I know.
He's still in his 20s.
I know. But he's, you know.
And he's naked.
As I'm sure you know,
you're going through time in lots of different ways.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's a whole vampire history.
There's a whole vampire history thing,
which you're only getting smatterings of.
There's a really actually for this part I kind of liked just purely out of nostalgia reasons, which is the whole dippy 70s ESP novel thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
I remember quite fondly. The early 70s, they were pretty cutting edge for the time, but there was ESP movies like The Fury.
You remember The Sixth Sense?
The Sixth Sense?
It was a TV show with...
not to be confused with the Bruce Willis.
With Gary Coleman. People. Somebody Coleman.
Oh, God. No,
it wasn't Gary Coleman, it was somebody Coleman. And he was a espionage private eye, but he had ESP.
Yeah, that's right. And every television show in the 70s
Pyramid Power.
At some point, Pyramid would like Bionic Woman and the $6 Million Man would have an ESP episode.
They actually constructed a pyramid during Pyramid Power.
Oh, no.
You were supposed to put razor blades underneath the pyramid, and then it was supposed to sharpen the razor blades. And you put water, and it would super energy charged water.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I had a pyramid made out of
straws. What would happen if you put your marijuana plant under it?
I don't know. I didn't even try to put it on my head.
But I'm thinking of other movies remember Michael Saracen, TV actor Michael Saracen, and the reincarnation of Peter Proud. Yes, who was also the sexiest Frankenstein ever.
Yeah, Michael Saracen.
That was
Frankenstein's
monster, actually.
But anyway, the
whole ESP.
I remember that Frankenstein because Jane Seymour was in it too and got her head pulled off.
That's right.
She wore a neck ribbon. A neck ribbon.
Oh my God. Well, it was the first. Oh my God, we're going astray. But we're going to talk about
this. Of course, I was in grade school. Yeah, that was a good draft. That was a good. Nothing like the book whatsoever, but
it started and ended in the Arctic.
That's true,
which was pretty cool.
Yeah. So anyhow,
Necroscope, Brian Lumley's Necroscope,
brought to you by Colgate and
the Forbidden Books Group
and
Chesterfield cigarettes
and Zud.
Zud. So this book, okay. So I actually kind of liked the ambition of colliding all, because it's pretty clear that he's trying to collide all these genres together.
And there's also like this science fiction physics.
Oh, yeah. There's diagrams in the book. You have the Mobius strip and
Time travel.
Yeah, and all that kind
uber dimensional.
Yeah, all that kind of that pseudoscientific hoo-ha. Yeah. But, you know, I kind of dug that. I thought that was kind of fun.
What he doesn't know about vampirism wouldn't fill a flea's codpiece.
Bite.
You need another drink?
Guacamole. Shaken and stirred.
Don't look, I give it down.
It's cocktail time!
It's cocktail time!
Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about this cocktail?
Well, I haven't named it yet, but the Necroscope-inspired cocktail, I thought needed to have some sort of national identity.
Yes!
At first I thought, because one of the characters is always drinking Slivovitz, that we put a Slivovitz-inspired cocktail in here, but have you ever had Slivovitz?
No, I never have until now.
It's fucking awful, so we're not going to be using any Slivovitz. It's awful. Awful, awful, awful. Last time I had it, we actually used more of it to start the grill.
Is it made from awful?
I don't know. I'm sure there's very good varieties of Slivovitz, but this was like homemade stuff that a friend of ours had bought back from a trip to the Czech Republic, and it was bad. but it did start the grill quite well.
Just really like expensive that. Lighter fluid.
Really expensive lighter fluid. So instead, I decided my favorite Eastern European liquor is, there's vodka.
Yes.
But also Becherovka.
Or vodka.
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 A little water.
If there's vampires.
There's got to be vodka.
Vodka.
Vodka. But also Becherovka, which is a clove liquor that is made in the Czech Republic. So I was thinking, you know, because there's various nationalities in this book. We have Russia.
Yes.
We have
British.
The British. So I thought gin.
Yes.
Nothing more British than that. So this drink in which we shake together two parts vodka, one part Becherovka, and one part Campari, which is a blood orange liqueur because this is a vampire book.
Yes. And an orange book.
It's an orange book.
It has orange writing on it.
So we're going to have some of that now. Let's see how it tastes.
Woo!
You know, it might take some getting used to.
That sucker is...
It's kind of... It's kind of bitter, but sweet. It's a bitter story.
Very good then. So, enjoy.
So what I was thinking of calling this drink... at first I was thinking of calling it the Mobius Stripper. But I think we're going to call this one Check Your Head. Check spelled S.
I mean, I like Mobius Stripper because you can do the
We'll call it the Mobius Stripper.
The Mobius
AKA
Stripper colon
Check Your Head. Check spelled like the Czech Republic.
Because there is a huge prostitution stripper thing going on in those Black countries.
Yes, there is.
We can call this drink the white slavery.
White slavery.
Okay, we're back to Necroscope.
So you hated the book because of the bad editing. I didn't hate the book. I actually I just have gripes. I have many gripes. More gripes than I would like with this book.
You have gripes about
my expectation with this book.
You also said there were no characters, but I don't understand what you mean by that.
Well,
there are characters.
Yeah, there are people with names that talk.
Oh, come
But that's not a well-drawn character. That's just.
Well, is there a well-drawn? I mean, did Liber have well-drawn characters? No.
Well, no. In the Condor Wife, there were well-drawn characters. Well,
yes, but.
But not so much in Dark Lady.
And does this genre tend to have well-drawn characters?
Sometimes they do.
But for the most part, it's about the story.
Yeah. You know, the most horrible book I read recently was Scott Smith's The Ruins, which is a very simple story. You know how this thing is going to end as soon as you figure out what's going on, which is about 100 pages in. It's a pretty long book. But the thing that makes that book so horrible is the fact that you know every single character. You learn so much
about
that's
a different kind of book.
But it was a fantastic horror novel.
But it was a different kind of horror novel. I mean,
This
is what it is.
This is a book with some gigantic flaws, and that's
what are the flaws?
The flaws are Harry Kell, the main character, is about as well drawn as Flat Stanley. He is thin.
He is not thin. He's young.
He is
young.
Now, are you saying this because you've read the second book?
No.
Because
I'm saying this to
because
me.
If that's the case, that's fine. I'm willing to give him that much of a benefit of the
doubt. Come on, you don't think when this kid is first struggling in the beginning of the book and trying to figure out what's going on with him, you think he's poorly drawn? I see him as,
you know, at the very beginning, I thought he was very compelling.
He's a compelling character. Yeah. But things this book, I mean, for the most part, he's a very small part of this book. The main character.
What the hell is with that? Does it become more important in the second book?
Well, I don't remember.
Fair enough.
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
Because my favorite character in this book is hands down Dragosani.
Who's a very well-drawn...
He's a pretty well-drawn character. He's not great, but he's pretty... I mean,
he's creepy.
He's not Leopold Bloom.
And again, he's
Carrie.
Sort of the anti... He's like the dark matter, you know?
He's
sort of like,
because he's
the unbreakable. He's like the, you know, he's the yin to the yang. And the
yeah, pulse. because I knew stuff about him. I knew how he was going to react.
Most of the book was about him, if you think about it.
It really was.
But really,
remember that the book is called Necroscope, not Necromancer.
Which
is a book by Gordon
Dixon. You weren't compelled when Harry meets his mother and she raises up to save. I mean, there's an interesting dynamic there, an interesting character there, and there's a sympathy, and...
Yeah.
And when he's struggling to, you know, figure things out, and, you know...
I think my main problem is when...
And that's most of the book. He doesn't, like, grow up until the last, I don't know, third of the book?
Yeah, kind of, yeah, yeah.
And then things are like... Things are like wham, 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 wham.
Oh, I know. I know. I mean, things just, this little book comes to a crashing halt because the plot really starts, I mean, at about.
Well, yeah, but, and that makes sense because you're trying, and I mean, okay, the one who read Liber, who is this drawn out.
I know.
Nothing but backstory.
I know, but that book was only 200 pages long. This book is 500 pages long.
Well.
I mean, I don't.
He's setting up a whole thing because you have to understand what is a necroscope. What do necroscopes do? Why are they this? Why are they not that? What's their connection? What is it? Why is it different than everything else? Because, you know, why is it different than a necromancer? And what does it do to the dead?
I mean, yeah.
He makes something happen to the dead that never happened before. Yeah.
This is,
and you know, and we're also finding out about vampires and where do they come from and what's
the... Yeah, they needed to spell out more about the vampires.
And that's the next of the books.
Yeah, you know,
that's the whole.
And I will forgive that, but I have to admit, for about 300 pages,
are you intrigued
it's kind
at
of
all?
Pissing me off.
Oh,
well, it's like, okay, when is this guy going to come out of the ground? Now,
and you get these little windows into. There's this little egg that floats above the little silver thing.
Yeah, yep.
So you're getting this. The whole vampire mythology is foreshadowed.
Yeah, it's foreshadowed.
Because Lumley's vampires come from a different.
Yeah, they're different.
It's a whole different.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Like genus almost.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean it's a different mythology.
It's a different species. It's not. Yeah, it's not like they're satanic. Or it's not like they're the undead.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah, it's more of a symbiotic relationship between a parasite and
yep.
So, but that's a whole different mythology.
Yeah, no, I'd actually like to find a bit, which is another reason that I'm interested to read the next book.
And even that, I mean, in that character of, what's that character's name?
Tibo Ferenczi.
Yes, thank you. That was an interesting character. He's an interesting character.
He was an interesting character.
He is.
What did you think?
Cunning. He is. Devious, he's dark, he's self, but in the end, his bargain with Harry is, will you come and visit me?
Yeah.
I don't want to be alone.
They don't want to be alone.
I mean,
I have to
that
admit,
was heartbreaking.
I know, I have to say that the part of the book that I found most engaging was The Plight of the Dead.
And the Plight, yes.
The Plight of the Dead. And I have to admit that it was actually kind of painful. I didn't want to think about
it
that much.
Yes, it was.
It's painful.
And I don't think they use the term in this book, but the other books, they talk about the Great Majority. Is their name for the dead, the Great Majority.
The Great Majority.
And how they are alone.
Yeah.
And how they basically are sort of kept
have imprisoned in the spot that they're buried.
Yeah.
In that Harry,
isolated.
Yeah, and isolated from each other. And Harry frees them basically to be able to communicate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's a bright light. I don't know. I find that whole thing very compelling.
I'll grant that. In fact,
it's the golden child sort of mythology. You know, you've got this person who has this gift, mm-hmm. who is this shining. He's a Christ.
Yeah, he comes in. He redeems everybody. He redeems everyone else's sins.
So I mean, that's very intriguing. I think that the Dragosi
character, Dragosan
is a very intriguing character, and I thought that
Dragosani, I think, means dragon's blood.
I'm sure it does. Not very subtle.
Not very.
You got to admit, when he's doing his necromancy thing, it is creepy.
That is
gross.
Creepy. That is creepy and gross. That opening scene.
And because you're also watching it through somebody else's eyes, which is so interesting.
Yeah, that opening scene was fantastic. This book has a number of very, very good set pieces.
Well, in the very beginning of the book, where Harry shows up and you don't know who he is, and here's this naked specter in the. That's the first scene.
Yeah, the frame.
You're like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
And at first I was like, oh, this book's going to suck. But then I was intrigued.
Yeah, that frame tale was actually pretty good.
So it's also a ghost story.
Yeah, well, it was kind of a ghost story. That frame tale, especially because you expect the frame tale to completely encompass the action of the novel. It starts, I'm going to tell you the story. And so you have this specter. Who you find out at the end of the book is Harry.
So it's kind of all in flashback, in a way.
That it's all in flashback, but it's not. Because at the very end of the book, he announces that what I'm telling you now is going to happen next week.
Right, so it's a foreshadowing.
Yeah, which I thought was, I don't know.
Which is Mobius Strip. I mean, everything gets turned back on itself over and over again.
Over and over again, yeah.
I mean, that's good.
Yeah, no. I'm just saying, this book has a lot of... What I see here is a book that could have been... much better.
And Dragosi's relationship with
Dragosan.
Well, when I read things, I hear them one way, because I thought his name was Kehoe. They don't have a pronunciation dictionary in this book. But that his relationship with the vampire, the underground vampire, is very interesting relationship.
Dragosani's.
Dragosani's.
Yes.
I mean, it's like,
yes,
this, he needs a savior as well. He needs to know who he is in this world and what his gifts are. And this Dragosani uses.
Yeah, which is why.
And then this pride.
That's what
really does sort of pick up that whole national pride. That really is, I mean, that's very,
very
Prussian,
Very Balkan.
Yeah.
Very Balkan. No, that was one of the things. See, if you just bear with me, I'm going to point out a couple of the flaws of the book.
All right. Well,
this is a book about vampires.
No, it's a book about the necroscope.
The book about the necroscope. Half of the book, better than half of the book, is about Dragosani.
Yes.
And Tibor Ferenczi, the undead, the buried vampire.
Well, this book isn't about the necroscope. It's about the dead, the different kinds of dead. Put it that way.
That actually makes sense. But I'm still going to make my point.
All right.
The fact that Harry Kale, doesn't know anything about Dragosani or Tibor Ferenczi until 4/5 of the way from the book.
But that's life, man. You don't know who you're going to cross paths with until.
No, that may be life, but it's a kind of a shitty way to write a novel.
How? Why do you think so?
Because you want things to be tied together. This is a book of complete fantasy. You don't expect it to be like real life. So you want it to be, to follow a certain.
Well, what you wanted to have happened, that he would have like ran into him like when he was 4 or something, and at some like.
I was reading through this, and I kept expecting them to be half brothers.
Oh my God! You are. East of Eden. What, hello, Danielle Steele.
I kept
that's all I gotta say to that.
Well, the fact that he had a Russian stepfather.
I loved that they did not hear these two parallel lives. They are shadows of each other. Mm-hmm. And even their skills are shadows of each other.
Yes.
And they don't need to be brothers. It's just like, did you ever see the movie Unbreakable?
Yes.
Yes. Which most people hated. I loved that movie.
Yeah, Unbreakable, actually, yeah, Unbreakable, when that movie first came out, and people just savaged it. This is the
and I don't know why, because I thought it was a great movie.
It's because critics love to tear a new one.
The sophomore effort.
For the sophomore effort, yep. And anyhow, it wasn't a sophomore effort, by the way. His first movie was Stuart Little.
Very so good, then.
Bam!
His sophomore effort in the genre.
Fine.
Ooh, I'm going to kick your ass right now.
You want some of this?
We're in the throwdown, dude. So, anyhow.
All right, we're going to pause just for a moment so I can kick Mike's fucking ass right now.
I give. All right, Mike here has forced me
I have exquisitely kicked his ass from here to the end of Doppeltown.
He has physically convinced me that Necroscope is a work of a towering work of staggering genius.
It is Shakespearean, and it's
better than Macbeth.
Macbeth.
Now that I've
eviscerated it,
I've
reached your hand into its offal and smelt it and rubbed it into your...
Rubbed its chitlins all over my head.
And made the dead cry.
It was by far, of the books we've read so far, the most rip-roaring.
It was rip-roaring.
It's a rip-roaring book.
So can I tell you the thing I didn't like about it?
Bring it on.
Because I did not, the end, probably the last 100 pages, perhaps, mm-hmm. when he walks through the Mobius strip, mm-hmm. when he talks to Mobius himself.
Mm-hmm. Here it is.
It is, my God, the kitchen sink.
Oh, I know.
Because so it is Deus Ex Machina.
What was the
times part? Five gazillion.
Well, the part that I thought, okay, this is too far, is when he invents an entire army of undead and then resurrects them in the last four pages.
Yes, and then when he meets this old woman who gives him this wisdom.
The Witch of Endor.
Yeah, the witch, the effing Witch of effing Endor.
What the fuck is that?
The hell is going on?
Now,
and he's jumping from hither and yon. And then he meets up the guy who just died. The premise in the book, in case you haven't... Hopefully you will have read this book.
Well, you are presumed to have read it.
But remember that when the dead die, they basically their mental life continues.
Yes.
And they become, so if you die and you're a baker, you are
mentally baking the best bread you've ever made.
You have you have eternity to perfect your mm-hmm. art,
yep.
your craft, your skill, your knowledge.
Yep.
And if you learn to break the bonds of sort of the earth, the plane, the time, mm-hmm. you can be hither and yon and throughout the universe.
Yep.
And he lost my point.
Hello. So Harry is able to tap into these people.
Right. Their vast knowledge.
Vast knowledge, which is much more vast now than it was when they were alive.
But he basically...
their unfinished work is all finished.
Right, so then he runs into this guy who's just murdered, or is going to be murdered. You don't really know. And this guy has perfected... he's a psychic, and he has perfected sort of understanding destiny and whatever. The character's ass is saved in a gazillion different ways, backwards and forward, and it all comes like... like with whoops, sorry. Within, you know, like 20 pages.
Is everybody's ears okay? I'm concerned about your ears right now.
Which was, I have to say, the first reading, it didn't bother me. Second reading, I guess maybe kind of preparing for this, was like, oh, for the love of God.
I know. See, that,
cheap.
That's the mark. When you reread a book, it'll get better or worse. And if it gets worse, that's really not a good sign.
And you know, this is probably contrary to everything I've been saying up to this point. But for me, it wasn't as interesting as a book the second time around.
That's not a good sign. So when you read it the first time, people,
do not read it again.
I hope you enjoyed it. It's kind of like going back and watching Land of the Lost. You know, you have good memories of it from watching it when you were a kid, but really, you don't want to go back and watch it.
But actually, I mean, I think I'm painting a broad brush when I say that, because there are parts that I thought I really, really liked. I liked the whole murder mystery of the mother being killed, and Harry...
That wasn't much of a mystery.
It wasn't much of a mystery, but it was a mystery.
Obviously, it was a Russian guy, because it had to be a Russian guy.
But then why, and then the mother avenging, and you know that. I really liked that for some reason, this sort of... And I guess
the working out of that plot line with the skating bit and the mother physically raising and dragging that guy down into the mud, that was
basically
cool.
7 books in this book. So you get really a lot for your $5.99.
You really get a lot for your $5.99.
But you know,
or $2.50 or $2.99 if you get it at the used bookstore, which I highly recommend because you know they're everywhere.
And all right, the Undead Army. All I could think about was Bedknobs and Broomsticks, Angela Lansbury. And World War II, calling up the dead Scots.
It makes me think of Zombie Lake.
But on the other hand, I don't know what it is. I think it goes back to what you were saying about, you know, somebody writing about the dead. For some reason, it's very compelling. I think about the book, not a great book, but an interesting book. The one about the girl who's dead. Been popular the last couple of years. I forget.
The
Stone Diaries.
The Lovely Bones.
Lovely Bones.
Which is Peter Jackson's next movie.
And, okay.
Yeah, after King Kong.
Very good. And Lovely Bones, or if you think about Our Town, even. You've got the dead speaking. For some reason, I don't know why is that so intriguing, intriguing?
It's intriguing, and it's very disturbing because, you know, for many people, one of their biggest fears is the fear of dying.
Of course, it all probably is everyone's, right?
But how much worse is that fear if dying is not the end, but you don't have, like, you know, this book has, there's no heaven or hell in this book. This is a completely atheistic book. When you die, you are...
it is an atheistic book. Right.
Yeah,
There's no God, there's no angels.
You are dead, and you are just so much more fucked than you were when you were.
Except
it is the worst thing that can possibly happen in this book is that you die.
Yes and no, because when you die, you get to, your work goes on. Your consciousness goes on to complete your work.
It's useless, save for Harry Kao's.
Well, up until that point, it doesn't matter. I mean, up until that point, they don't know any different. They're isolated in and of themselves, onto themselves. Mm-hmm. And then when Harry comes along, he connects the dead. The dead are connected.
Yeah.
They almost form like a web or the game of telephone.
Sort of an undead internet.
It is. I mean, I was thinking more of tin cans with strings, but...
Which is what the internet is.
Yes, basically. A web of strings.
A web of strings.
So, but it's like each little island of a person is doing their own little deal, which is kind of how life is, right?
Well, yeah.
Unless you connect with everybody else and... Whatever.
No.
So there you go. That's it.
By God, I think we got the kernel of the book there for a second.
What was the kernel?
Well, the whole thing about the dead. That was, I mean, that's the thing about this book that I think is really meaty. I mean,
but it's very endearing in a way. You know how the dead reach out to this person. The dead are grateful. Even like the evil dead are in the aloneness of the dead.
Well, I think there is some truth to that.
I think. If you're going to believe in a life after death, I think there is something about the dead drawn towards life. Yeah. And maybe there's a truth in that, because that comes up in lots of different stories, right? I mean,
Yeah.
That's not a new idea.
Well, and I also think back to Buffy being brought back from the dead. Not too happy about it.
No, she was in a good place.
Yeah. Better place.
Kind of pissed her off.
Did piss her off. Took the whole season to kind of get that work through.
took an entire 20 episodes.
Dear Lord.
Oh, so what else we want to
talk
about?
We promised that this book would, that this podcast would not have an episode without a reference to Buffy.
And
there it was.
There it was.
I worked it in somehow.
Yeah, there it was. Yeah.
Anything else about this book?
You know, I think I would support the idea of reading the next one. Not next. Not even the next one after that. But
sometime in the summer.
Sometime later this summer.
So did talking about the book at all make you like the book any better?
Yes. Did talking about the book at all make you like the book any less?
No.
He's lying.
Folks. No, it didn't.
He's lying!
I knew. It's like having a lover that you know their faults and you know their good,
yeah, you know,
good sides.
And I think you alluded to this earlier in this evening's podcast that my tastes are very... I can tolerate a lot of crap, and that's true. And I can tolerate this. I like this book well enough. It's not my favorite.
Also,
book,
you, I think you had, you were built up for this book.
You know, I've been meaning to read this
because
book.
Because it's,
I remember,
one of the,
I remember when this book first came out.
Is it one of the new pantheon of horror books? You
yes.
Know, it's, so
yes. And it had been built up. I was expecting this this whole new thing in Lovecraftian style vampire-ish novels, and what
it's
I got
like,
here was, well,
when that tentacle or whatever comes up from the ground.
Well, every scene with him standing in that clearing, talking mentally to this buried thing, was pure Lovecraft.
And I also think when the mother and her bones and the dead and under the water had a Lovecraftian.
That was like a Tales from the Crypt.
I'm also
scene.
Saying this without having read any Lovecraft. So the beginning of one story and I stopped.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no, Lovecraft didn't really do like, you know, animated dead sort of things generally.
But I mean that there's that, not so much that, but the sort of the gruesome descriptions.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Not
well,
so much
that kind of stuff is like those old 50s horror comics like Tales from the Crypt and stuff like that, where you have the dead coming back to avenge their deaths, you know, like
but the whole tentacle and the like, there's that sort of viscera, there's that, these weird shapes of creatures.
That was Lovecraft,
which, you know, quite frankly, isn't
that
interesting
to
me?
The whole parasite, anything with parasites.
And the shiny silver egg, that feels,
yeah.
Yeah. That's not as interesting to me at all, you know, but
Lovecraft, Lumley said that, has said that, he constantly writes Lovecraftian fiction, but his heroes are different than Lovecraft's. Lovecraft's heroes are always, A, they're blind to the obvious, and B, always doomed.
And Harry is a hero.
But Lumley's heroes kick ass.
But
he
wins, but he doesn't win because he dies.
Yes, he does. He does.
And weirdly, I mean, in the other books, he ends up reincarnating into his children, and I mean, it's twisted. It's
The whole thing.
So he's a hero, but
he's
sacrificed. You know,
I mean, right. I have one last gripe.
All right, go on.
It's the character whose name is.
Sir Keenan.
No, not that Gormley. It's the Russian dude.
Gierski.
I thought it was Vladny or something like that. He's the precog guy.
The precog guy who dies.
Who dies? Yeah.
Yeah.
Explains how he sees people's life things.
Right.
It's like a blue line. I'm
right.
Like, what is this blue line?
It was
like?
Very.
That
it
was dumb.
It was very ghost.
It was just dumb.
It was dumb. I did not like that.
It was dumb.
I did not like that. That's what I'm talking about. This kitchen
sink. We have reached consensus.
Listen, I agree with you. That last 100 pages was the kitchen sink.
I mean, yeah, I know. It was
like
every fucking thing that he could throw in there to sort of make sense.
No, it took me 3 weeks to read the first 400
And it really
pages.
Was like, oh my God, I gotta find an ending to this.
Yeah.
Because there's a sequel that's already probably written.
Yeah, he's working on it, yeah.
And it really is, you gotta read this book thinking this is a book that's a preface to a whole mythology.
Yeah. And he keeps spinning stuff out of the mythology. He's got other mythologies that he spins out on. Lumley does. He's very prolific.
You know what strikes me is that I think we've cut... I mean, I cut my teeth on different kind of horror, I think, than you did.
Yes.
I mean, well, when I think about it, honestly, Dracula in fifth grade, my horror and horror and kind of science fiction. So it was, you know...
And for me, it was science fiction, fantasy, and then horror...
It was
really third.
It was Dracula and then H.G. Wells and Stranger in a Strange Land. What's his
name? Robert Heinlein.
Heinlein and then Anne Rice before she went crazy. Those first couple books.
Yeah.
And then Stephen King, of course. I mean, I mean Stephen King was just coming into his heyday when I was a kid, so.
Yeah.
I mean, and Peter Straub and...
Did you ever do much Dean Koontz?
No, I didn't do Dean Koontz.
I have never read Dean Koontz. Which is, you know, I feel kind of bad.
Burnt Offerings, Ira Levin. I didn't know about Lovecraft. I didn't know about any of those people, you know, so much. So,
yeah.
Well, different... And then the movies, of course, you know, so that's a different... You have a different sort of take...
Yeah,
you know, and I cut my teeth on Dark Shadows. I mean, gothic, slow-moving horror.
And I was a little too young. I remember Dark Shadows when it was originally airing.
I would race home from school, third grade, to see Dark Shadows.
Yeah, and I was probably...
cried when they took it off the air.
Dark Shadows was probably just finishing up
and there was
when
no
I
video,
was in third grade.
And there was no videotape, so you couldn't tape it
you
to
couldn't
watch
tape it.
Later.
I know, you had to be there or miss
And The
it.
Exorcist, I mean, I read The Exorcist, the book, when it first came out, and then it became this movie, and that changed everything. That movie,
that was a big deal.
That was a, and you look at it now, and you're like,
But well, I don't know. I saw Halloween. I saw the re-release of The Exorcist a couple years ago, and it is still pretty shocking. Still,
okay. And the first Halloween, shocking.
Yeah,
I mean,
okay. I have a confession.
The woman
is
a heroine.
I have a confession to make. I've never seen Halloween.
All right. So I've never seen Dawn of the Dead. You've never seen Halloween.
All right, we will
this
have.
This is shameful.
We'll have a night of shame.
And we have to cap it off with Rosemary's Baby.
Okay, fair enough.
That's my favorite.
I know that one. I have
all
seen.
All right. So we're almost at the end here because I want to mention a couple of things. Brian Lumley has a web page, www.brianlumley.com.
Yes.
And then there's a fan site called Necroscopy. Just Google that.
Google that stuff up, and you.
And
just
we are Necronomipod. Our email is necronomipod@gmail.com.
Yep.
And then our website is now www.necronomipod-podcast.blogspot.com.
Yep. We're one of the Google blogs.
And I'll put up these. These sites on our website to get to Lumley if you're interested.
Yep.
And what's our next book, man?
We haven't discussed it.
We're gonna
decide right now.
Okay.
What our next book's gonna be?
We talked about that one that we were gonna go get today, actually.
Oh, we were gonna go get an older one before Horror Was Horror. We were gonna get a werewolf novel, sort of an interesting werewolf novel, written by Jack Williamson, called Darker Than You Think.
Yeah, I think we should do it.
Should we do that?
Darker Than You Think.
We'll go grab ourselves a copy of Darker Than You Think, and we will read that book.
And read it with us, and if you have suggestions, email us.
Yep.
Other
books that we're kicking around to think about, thinking about reading, we agreed not right away to read Dan Simmons' first novel, The Song of Kali.
Yeah, I don't want to read that.
You don't want to read that?
Not right now.
Really?
He's got
a lot of other horror
maybe
novels
in the fall.
Yeah, maybe in the fall. Other ones, I was just showing you some Thomas Ligotti books, but those are pretty hard to find, so maybe we'll not curse you by trying to trying to find.
Well, I read faster than you, so I can read it and then pass it back to you.
No, but I'm talking about our listeners.
Our listeners.
Yeah, because if they want to read along, it's not easy to get your hands on a Thomas Ligotti book. Although he's got one in print right now, The Heart of the World. No, the Shadow of the World.
Something like that. We just talked about Shirley Jackson.
Shirley Jackson is.
And Shirley Jones.
She wrote
The Partridge Murders.
The Partridge Murders. The Partridge
Family Murders.
hit by a bus. The Partridge Family Murders.
It's a possessed bus.
Pecked to death by Partridge.
And I would like to suggest going into some, quote, juvenile fiction, which I love, which I think is the. Juvenile fiction is that just needs to be tossed out.
Juvenile fiction? What you mean? YM, young adult reader, YA, young adult
readers. Yeah, there's all sorts of ways to go with that. But yeah, I think there's some interesting things in there.
Like what?
Well, I'm thinking of. I have to think about it.
All right. Well, we will think about it. Let me just check our timer here to make sure we're not running out of time.
104.
So we have 2 minutes.
Let's put a stick in his puppy and
stuff garlic in its mouth and
cut off its head.
Cut off its head.
All right, then.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.